Well, welcome to Legendary Lasses. I'm Ashley.
I'm KB.
And I'm Sally.
How are you, ladies?
You know, I'm doing okay. I'm here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Same. I'm very tired, so I apologize if I am a little low energy today, but we're going to make it through. I promise I have my notes ready for the episode. I really do. I'm not joking. I do. But today, I want to talk to you guys about Violet Constance Jessup. Do you guys know anything about her? And if you do, no spoilers.
I don't think
I don't know anything about her, but I'm excited.
Solid. Here we go. So Violet Constance Jessup was born on October 2nd, 1887 in Bahia Blanca, Argentina. She's the oldest daughter of Irish immigrants William and Catherine Jessup, who would have a total of 9 children, but only 6 whom would survive. Only 6 of whom or who? Who would survive? Yeah, I've heard it both ways. Sure.
I think it's a whom, but I don't want to say because
I think it's whom.
Yeah, that sounds right to my ears, but that doesn't always mean it's right. So
yeah, that doesn't always mean I listen to the rules correctly. Yeah. Anyway, we'll but say
the
they
rules.
Had. We'll say they had a total of 9 children, only 6 of whom would survive. So as you can imagine, with so many little ones in the family, Violet spent a lot of her time in childhood caring for her siblings. That is until she became very ill. Mm. Violet became so sick and frail that she was taken to the doctors, who would diagnose her with tuberculosis and the expectation of only 9 months to live.
Huh.
Yeah. Despite the seriousness of her illness and the doctor's worst fears that it would be fatal, Violet actually got better from tuberculosis, which didn't happen all that often in 1887.
No, the opposite happened a lot of the time.
A lot of the time it was the opposite of that. This is why I've taken to calling her the luckiest girl in the world, and we'll see why that moniker also fits her later on. But yeah, so we're starting out, she's already having a rough go of it. Not too long after she got better, Violet's father died due to complications from a surgery. So now her dad is gone. It's her, her mom, and 5 other little ones. And after his death at 16, Violet and the remaining family moved to England. While in England, Violet would attend a convent school and look after her youngest sister as her mother was working as a stewardess at sea. Can you imagine that?
I imagine like a pirate ship, but then like flight attendants from the 60s.
Oh my god. That is like the weirdest steampunk fever dream.
Oh man.
So Violet's looking after her younger sister until her mother also gets ill and comes back home to England. Knowing her mother was unable to work and thus unable to support the family, Violet chooses to leave school and follow in the footsteps of her mother by becoming a stewardess.
I think I might have an idea who this person is now, but I'm going to save it.
Oh, do you?
Maybe.
Okay.
Go ahead. We'll see if I'm right.
Now, getting a job as a stewardess wasn't as easy as just walking onto a boat. Violet had to attend many interviews for novice stewardess positions and would always get the same reasoning why they could not hire her. What do you guys think they couldn't hire her?
I mean,
she's got too many teeth in her mouth.
Which for 1887 might be the normal amount of teeth.
I mean, maybe because since she had tuberculosis, I know sometimes even if people recovered from that, they still had issues. So that would be maybe my guess. But I'm willing to bet it's something more misogynistic. So go ahead.
I was going to say that's a very logical reasoning. And I really like that answer. But in fact, it was because she was too pretty and too young.
What?
Yep. She was too pretty to be hired.
It's
because
like
it would be distracting.
It's like saying, oh, like when you apply for a job, they're like, oh, you're overqualified for this job.
Yeah.
Which
yeah. Yeah. Yep. Mm. That's a real thing that she was told on multiple occasions.
Did she make herself ugly?
she would actually dress herself down and go to interviews, and she'd like not wear her best clothes. She wouldn't have her hair perfectly done. And she ended up getting a job in 1908 at the age of 21 as a stewardess, and she was working for the Royal Mail Line on the Orinoco boat. It's a ship. I shouldn't call it a boat. It's a ship. But just a few years into working for the Royal Mail, in 1911, Violet would change employers, although she was reluctant to do so because this new line would cross the North Atlantic, and she wasn't very fond of that because of the weather conditions. And she had also heard horror stories of a particularly demanding class of passengers. Do you know which passenger line she joined?
I think I do.
Okay.
I think this is a Titanic lady.
Joining the White Star line of passenger ships, Violet was hired as a stewardess first for the RMS Olympic.
I've heard of this lady.
So she's so cool. So her first ship, the Olympic, was the largest passenger vessel at the time and decked out in luxury. On September 20th, 1911, Jessop boarded the Olympic as it left Southampton, England, and promptly collided with the British warship, the HMS Hawke.
Which,
miraculously, there were no fatalities in this collision, and despite damage to both ships, both of the ships made it back to port without sinking, and all of their passengers were unloaded, which is crazy.
Like, how does that happen?
I don't know how a cruise ship, basically, just runs into a warship. It's not like you're gonna miss it.
Yeah.
You know, like...
And it's not like you have like, oh, I have the small lane. It's the fucking ocean. Like, you don't, you can just.
Yeah. I don't know if it, and the thing about it too is that like, it had barely left port. So I don't know if it was like, the port entrance was maybe too narrow. I couldn't find exactly how they collided into each other. But like, these people spent so much money decking out this luxury cruise line to only run it into a warship.
I also imagine that's the slowest collision ever to watch, because you know it's happening. Like, you can see it happening.
Yeah.
And then, but you can't turn the boat fast enough, so you just have to like,
yeah,
let it happen.
God, again, it's like, oh yeah, because like, they couldn't have been moving very fast because these were still steam engines and they were still within the actual port, so like,
yeah,
how?
Yeah.
Who was driving?
They had had too much celebratory champagne beforehand. That's the real story, I'm sure.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, that would make more sense. So, cautious to board another passenger ship, it took her friends convincing her to rejoin the White Star line. And Violet finally gave in and took another job with White Star, working 17-hour shifts and earning a monthly total of £2.10. Her newest ship would also be taking off from Southampton. So, on the 10th of April, 1912, at age 24... Violet boarded the RMS Titanic. So before we get into the craziness of the devastating events of the Titanic, I think it's probably good to take a break, because it's going to get buck wild. And it would be weird to take a break in the middle of people dying. So let's go ahead and take a break, and then we'll be back for the rest of Violet's story. So our lovely lady Violet has boarded the Titanic. And this is the thing that Violet Jessop is probably most well known for, because while on...
I've never heard of this. What's the Titanic? I've never...
never
heard of this. Titanic? I don't know. The only thing, it boosted the careers of Leonardo DiCaprio. Something about Leonardo DiCaprio, yeah, right? And Celine Dion.
Yeah, it's the biography of Leonardo. Yes.
Yeah.
Kate Winslet.
And Kate Winslet. That yeah, it's just like
the biography of their everyday life.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Violet actually keeps a diary while she's on board of the Titanic. And this diary actually survived. She was able to, like, take it with her, which is interesting. But one of the key people that Violet mentions in her diary is Mr. Andrews. And this is important because Mr. Andrews was the Irish businessman and shipbuilder who backed the luxury White Star Line. Most of the crew greatly cared for Mr. Andrews, as it seemed he was the only one on board who cared about the crew and their conditions. And Violet would write of him, "Often during our rounds, we came upon our beloved designer going about unobtrusively with a tired face but a satisfied air. He never failed to stop for a cheerful word, his only regret that we were getting further from home." Apparently, it was very well known
maybe
that Mr. Andrews...
Maybe his only regret is that they hit a fucking iceberg.
This is before the iceberg. which would become his biggest regret. It was pretty well known that Mr. Andrews loved his home in Ireland, and so anytime he left, he would always get a little bit depressed, which is so sad. But also, like, you picked the wrong line of work to be in if you didn't want to leave home. Yeah. While on board this four-day-long journey of the Titanic, Violet would make a habit to take in some fresh air on deck before retiring to her quarters that she shared with her roommate, stewardess Elizabeth Leather, which is, like, a really cool name. Every night before falling asleep, Violet would read an old Hebrew prayer that was translated by an old Irish woman who gifted it to Violet. This is like the weirdest hand-me-down I've ever heard of. And it was apparently also a very strangely worded prayer that Violet said was to protect her from fire and water. And if this doesn't sound like a prayer...
Sounds more like a spell.
Yeah, it sounds like some old Irish woman took something that was written in Hebrew and turned it into a weird protection-based spell, I guess. It's very strange.
Well, it worked.
Yeah, it worked. It's just strange, though, because Violet was a pretty devout Catholic and was always known to have her rosary in her apron while she worked. So it's like this weird mix of, like, Catholicism and... perhaps a spell? I don't know. It's weird. I found that very strange.
Not that strange if you, like, dig into some stuff, because that happened a lot. Maybe not so much this period or place, but yeah. Mm. I don't know. I
mean, that's fair. I feel like we've talked about the, like, mixture of folk pagan and mm-hmm. religion, but, like, it just seems weird because, well, maybe it's not weird because, I mean, this is Edwardian times. We've moved out of Victoria, and I assume that, like, weird spiritualism has also kind of gone with these people from the Victorian period into this period. So, like, mm-hmm. maybe that's why it doesn't feel weird to them. I'm not sure. I found that very strange, though, reading it. But on April 14th, 1912, that fateful night of the maiden voyage of the Titanic, Violet writes that she was, quote, comfortably drowsy in her bed, but not yet fully asleep when the collision with the iceberg occurred. She was quickly ordered up on deck to function as a makeshift translator and tasked with showing the non-English-speaking passengers how to act when they couldn't understand the instructions being given to them. You guys. Like, what? First of all, can you imagine being one of those non-English-speaking passengers that's like, you guys, the boat is sinking. What do I do?
Yeah.
That would be terrifying. But then to be in Violet's position of trying to, I mean, in pure stewardess fashion, gesture at them to know what they're supposed to do.
Yeah.
Like, I couldn't even begin to imagine.
And they're probably like, remember, say it with your best customer service voice.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Keep your smile. everything's fine. While also on deck, she watched nothing as the crew began wrong. Lowering the lifeboats down. can you imagine being the non-English speaker, seeing all these people lowering the lifeboats and being like, oh, it's that?
Oh shit. No. And then you have someone just being like, make sure to leave a 5-star Yelp review.
Well, and like, I think that's the thing about the Titanic that makes me the most upset is that they tried to remain calm for the passengers because they're mostly upper class. And that, like, it killed people. Like, yes, you didn't have enough lifeboats. Yes, there was all this other stuff, too. But, like, it was just like a keep a stiff upper lip and accept your fate kind of a deal, which is upsetting to me, I think. But of this time, Violet would write, I was ordered up on deck. Calmly, passengers strolled about. I stood at the bulkhead with the other stewardesses, watching the women cling to their husbands before being put in the lifeboats with their children. Sometime after, a ship's officer ordered us into the boat 16, first to show some women it was entirely safe. As the boat was being lowered, the officer called, here, Miss Jessup, look after this baby, and a bundle was dropped onto my lap.
Okay.
So now she has a baby with her. And after 8 hours of being in the lifeboat and watching the Titanic sink in 2 hours and 40 minutes, the survivors, including Jessup, were rescued by the RMS Carpathia. Violet wrote, I was still clutching the baby against my hard cork life belt I was wearing when a woman leaped at me and grabbed the baby and rushed off with it. It appeared that she put it down on the deck of the Titanic while she went off to fetch something, and when she came back, the baby had gone. I was too frozen and numb to think it strange that this woman had not stopped to say thank you. So she's assuming the mother of this baby lost it, saw her, Violet, with it. And was like, give me my baby back. It could have been anybody. Yeah. It could have been anybody. It could have been anybody else's baby. Yeah. Pure chaos. And I mean, if you think about the situation that they've been in, they're probably not only wet, but it's also freezing cold at this time. I mean, they hit an iceberg. They've watched their what was supposed to be an unsinkable ship sink in a mere 2 hours and 40 minutes. They then watched the rest of the survivors jump into the water to try to save themselves, but then die of hypothermia, if not drowning. Like, the amount of shock these people would have been in is unthinkable.
She saw Leo die.
Yeah, I can't imagine. So, 2 years after...
If you look at her diary, you just see near, far, wherever you are.
I was going to say, you look in her diary, and it's just a little side note of, there was enough room on that door, you bitch.
Or just like, it's so fucking cold.
Mm-hmm. That would have been my diary entry. So, 2 years after this disastrous voyage... World War One begins. She can't get a break, man. She's just like diving headfirst in this stuff. So during the war, Violet served as a stewardess for the British Red Cross. And on the 21st of November, 1916, in the Aegean Sea, Violet is on board the HMHS, Britannic, which was another White Star Liner passenger ship that was converted to a floating hospital. That morning, the vessel shook as a German naval mine exploded. This was a devastating incident, because only in 55 minutes, the entire ship had sunk. Now, I mean, this is the same kind of ship that the Titanic was supposed to be, which took 2 hours and 40 minutes to sink initially. This one sinks 55 minutes flat. It devastating. 30 of the 1,066 people on board died. Violet wrote, the white pride of the ocean's medical world dipped her head a little, then a little lower, and still lower. All the deck machinery fell into the sea like a child's toy. Then she took a fearful plunge, her stern rearing hundreds of feet into the air until, with a final roar, she disappeared into the depths. which is like beautifully written too.
Yeah.
Can we talk about that? I mean, it's really great imagery for somebody who's trying to fight for their life at this point. To survive, people were forced to jump into the water or into a lifeboat. But the ship's propellers created such a strong current that it was swallowing lifeboats whole and pulling passengers into the propellers themselves. Violet wrote, "I leapt into the water but was sucked under the ship's keel, which struck my head. I escaped, but years later, when I went to the doctor because of a lot of headaches, he discovered I had once sustained a fracture of the skull."
Wow.
Like, this lady is dodging Charon left, right, and center, and is like, oh, I have a headache.
Because you cracked your skull open on a ship.
Yeah. And what's funny is, like, I hadn't mentioned it before, but she was like very proud of her long auburn hair. And it's actually one of the things that she attributes to being able to survive this incident is her hair, because she thinks the bun actually absorbed some of the shock, even though she had a fracture, which I think is so interesting. Yeah. But I think that's a really cute thing to be like, my hair is so amazing that it saved my life. But she's so cute. But I just can't. I mean, this is like some Final Destination shit. Like, she can't try any harder to escape death if she tried. Oh, my gosh. But after the war, Violet continues to work for the White Star Line before joining the Red Star Line and eventually returning to the Royal Mail. And I'm sorry, but if I had survived not only the Olympic and the Titanic, but then added on this Britannic ship sinking, I think I'd be done working as a stewardess.
Yeah, I could be like, oh, you know, I could, I'd make buttons. I don't know.
Yeah, like, I'm really good at painting. I'll paint people's walls, I guess. Like, do you need wallpaper put up? I guess I'll do that. But again, I guess, like, we also have to think about the time period. Like, I don't know what else was available to her. I just can't imagine getting back on a ship. And I think that's really fascinating and, like, endearing in a way because it's, I mean, like, even the traumatic memories that you must have stepping back onto a ship after that. Like, the internal and mental, emotional strength that this woman must have possessed. Yeah. Well, I can't even imagine.
Even with, you know, I've had, like, cars stall on me before, like, bad stuff happened with my car. And so now, anytime I hear a noise in my car, I'm like, what is it? So I can't even imagine, like, being on a ship again and you're just waiting for something bad to happen.
Yeah, like, you've had it proved to you 3 times that these cruise ships are just tin cans in the ocean. That, like, I can't, I mean, like, I've never had somebody break into my house. I've never been stalked. I've never done anything. But anytime I hear a slight noise outside my own apartment, I jump. So, like, if nothing bad has happened to me in that situation, I can't imagine getting onto a boat after being through all of this and just being like, yeah, cool, I can work, no problem. It's just, it's incredible to me. And she's a very strong person.
Maybe she was like, man, the spell works, I'm good.
Yeah, you know, yeah, maybe that was it.
Over. I go, what if she's like, let's try my luck again?
Gosh, I just,
or I, like, can't. She's just like, fuck it, you know, I have nothing else to lose. Fuck it, I've survived 3 of them. You know?
Yeah. Well, and what's interesting too is that Violet isn't the only Titanic survivor on the Britannic when it sinks. There's 2 other Titanic survivors with her at the time who actually end up surviving this ship sinking as well. And I just can't, I'd like, you guys aren't,
are they
even
like
2
all competitive,
years.
Like, oh, I'm gonna survive the next ship.
I hope they were taking bets on who survived the next one, because they'd probably be rich. But anyway, during her employment with Red Star, Violet worked on two around-the-world voyages, which is so cool. Like, this girl went all the way around the world twice, and they were supposedly on the largest ships that were created at that time, too. So, I can... Girl gets around. In her late 30s, Violet had a brief but disastrous marriage. The name of her husband had long eluded researchers, and until 2011, no one knew who he was or might be. Forgive me if I butcher this name, but I think it's Sheenan Maloney believes he discovered the mystery groom, and in his article, Violet's Barren White Star Wedding, named him as John James Lewis. Now, this is the only article that I found that speculates who this person was with a real name. And I can't find any other articles that go to support his research. So it's possible. It doesn't seem like there's a lot of people talking about it, though. Because I don't think it's that important, because they weren't married that long. In 1950, Violet retired and moved to Suffolk, England. Let's talk about this, too, okay? She's born in 1887. She begins working on ships in 1908, and in 1950 is when she retires.
Yeah, and a lot of change in the type of ship she would have been on.
Yeah. I just, like, that seems like an extremely long time. Now, I don't know if she's a stewardess that long, but in 1950 she was retiring, and if that's the only thing she had been doing... I assume she's at least doing something like hospitality. Mm-hmm. But anyway, she would fill her home in Suffolk with mementos of her... I guess I did know, because I did write this. She filled her home with mementos of her 42 years at sea and looked after her hens and her garden, which is, again, just another cute little thing. Right, like, now,
and I'm in my late 20s. Like...
I know. And we've only gone through a pandemic and a recession twice. So during her retirement, Violet alleges that she received a phone call on a stormy night from a woman who asked Violet, "Did you save a baby from the Titanic?" Violet says, "Yeah, I did." The woman on the other end of the phone replied, "That was me," laughed, and hung up.
Laughed and hung up.
Yes, ma'am. That is
not
what
a
I said.
Thank you. Nothing.
I mean, if it is the baby, her mom didn't say thank you, so I don't know we can expect this baby to.
Ungrateful piece of shit.
Oh my God.
But no, what a strange thing to do. Like, go through all that trouble to find her and call her, then laugh and hang up.
You saved me! Ha ha!
Yeah. Well, and here's the strange part, too, is she recounts this phone call to her friend and biographer, John Maxtone Graham. And he writes this phone call off as a prank by children in the village that she's living in. But Violet insists that can't be true and told him, "No, John, I've never told anyone that story but to you."
And what a
Which
shitty
is like,
prank.
What? Yeah, also a very shitty prank.
Like, no, like, is your refrigerator running? You better go catch it. No, just come on.
Like, I can't. Yeah, that seems like a very... poor joke. It's not even funny. So here's the thing, is that records do indicate that there was a baby from the Titanic that was saved on lifeboat 16, the boat she was in, but it was a male baby named Asad Thomas, who was recorded to be handed to another stewardess, Edwina Trout, which is a funny name. But that baby was later reunited with his mother on the Carpathia, too. And there's no records indicating that Violet would have been handed a baby. It's in her memoirs. It's, you know, something that she's definitely obviously thought about. But yeah, I don't know. What do you guys think about
that? I mean, given the...
Do you think it might have just not been recorded?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's my thought. I mean, within all the chaos and desperation for survival,
some people slip through the cracks, you know?
Yeah, also, obviously that would happen.
If that lady just came and took him, there's no time to record which baby this is, who his mother is, who he got handed off mm-hmm. to. It was like a...
Right.
I'm taking the baby, here we go. Like, yeah.
Yeah, that was my thought too, is that like... This Assad, yeah, I think this Assad Thomas was probably recorded on the Carpathia, and then reunited. Yeah. And I think Violet stepped onto the Carpathia. Someone saw her with their baby and was like, "Bye. Why do you have my child?" So I think it definitely did happen. I don't think she has any. She doesn't have anything to gain lying about saving a baby. Like, this lady's already survived 3 shipwrecks. Like, she doesn't need to look more like a hero, you know? Mm-hmm. But anyway, in the film 1958, A Night to Remember, a scene depicts naval architect Thomas Andrews instructing a stewardess to be seen wearing her life belt as an example to other passengers. Many scenes from this film inspired similar and in some cases almost dialogue identical scenes in James Cameron's later 1997 blockbuster Titanic, which includes a small scene between Andrews and a stewardess named Lucy, which is all certainly very similar to Jessup's own experience. Mm-hmm. She was actually interviewed for a magazine after A Night to Remember was released in 1958. So putting kind of those two pieces together, I would assume that she was probably asked about her experience, and they put that into the 1958 film. And Violet Constance Jessup, who is often given the moniker Miss Unsinkable, died of congestive heart failure at the age of 83, which is like a really long life, especially for this lady.
Yeah.
In 1996, her memoirs are published under the title Titanic Survivor, the newly discovered memoirs of Violet Jessup, who survived both the Titanic and Britannic disasters. Definitely read it. It's very good. It's very interesting. I don't remember if this was in the memoirs or if it was something else I was reading about the Titanic, but there was it definitely was something else. But so Mr. Andrews, who designed the ships, right? He actually went down with the Titanic, and somebody recorded seeing him in the public smoking room having a casual cigar and a whiskey, and had discarded his life jacket because he had come to terms with the fact that the boats were needed for other people and he was going down. And I think that's heartbreaking. Yeah. Especially for someone who like is already upset leaving their home in Ireland.
Yeah.
That's very sad. Some other references for Violet Jessup are a TV movie made in the year 2000 called Britannic. There's a main character, Vera Campbell, played by an actress named Amanda Ryan, who is apprehensive about traveling on the Britannic due to surviving the sinking of the Titanic 4 years earlier. And the character background is almost certainly lifted from Jessup. In 2006, Shadow Divers, which is another show, but it's a documentary, reenactments of the actual reenactments of the sinking. Mm-hmm. And Rosemary E. Lund played the role of Violet Jessup and reenacted her jumping into the water from her lifeboat, which was drawn into the Britannic's propellers. The character of Jessup is also featured in the stage play Iceberg Right Ahead by Chris Burgess, which was staged for the first time upstairs at the Gatehouse in Highgate in 2012, and it commemorated the centenary of the sinking of the Titanic. It's been billed as a dramatic account of the last 12 hours in the life of an unsinkable ship. There's some other interesting references to her and other pop culture stuff. One that I'm particularly fascinated in reading is called In the Deep, and it's by Alma Katsu, and it's a historical horror novel published in 2020. And Jessup is a secondary character, and the fictional main character meets Jessup while working on the Titanic, and Jessup offers her a job, and subsequently Subsequently, if I could talk, they both work on the Britannic together as well. That seems like a really interesting fiction novel that I'm interested in checking out for sure. But yeah, that's Violet Jessop. I can't imagine the amount of strength that this person had.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And she lived such a long life.
I'm glad we've got someone who lived a long, nice, happy life, because sometimes I feel like we talk about people and it's like, and then they died and it was terrible.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I'm really drawn to that for some reason. But yeah, I think it's interesting that she has this like really tragic but adventurous lifestyle, especially for someone at that age and in that time. And somehow makes it through. Like, if she can do that, I can deal with what I'm dealing with.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think we all need
a lucky gal, though.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Oh, gosh, I feel exhausted now. Well, I think we should wrap up the episode. I hope everyone liked listening about Violet's life.
Yes. I just want to be her without the like boat tragedies.
Like, yeah.
Get to go do cool things, not sink and crack my head open, and then retire and live to a ripe old age. That'd be great.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. Well, KB, do you want to wrap us up and send us out?
I will try. Well, thank you guys for listening. It's good to be back. I know I'm enjoying it. If you'd like to check out some of our different accounts, we have an Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, all of that. We do also have our website, which is legendarylasses.wordpress.com.
I think so.
Yes. And if you do feel so inclined and would like to support us, we have a link there on our anchor page that you could support our podcast if you like. And any of that will go towards research materials and things to make the podcast better. So that's great. And
did you mention our email?
Oh, yes, we do have an email address. It's legendarylasses@gmail.com. If you have any comments, thoughts, we'd really like to hear those. So
rate and review us.
Yes, that too. Rate and review us. That's really important for us. Helps us kind of get our podcast out to more people. If you feel like doing that, you can do that on basically any platform that allows you to rate. I think I've got it. Okay. All right. Well, go out, make waves, change history, and
oh, stay legendary and kick some ass.
We'll get it right next time.
I hope everyone stays as lucky as Violet.
Pie's better than cake.
All right, well, bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.